Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to In the Spotlight. I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane. And three times a month, we bring you the authors with the most flaming pens in the literary arena, the publishers dedicated to producing the hottest books, and industry professionals who are sure to take your books to the next level. Today's featured guests are author and inspirationalist Yvette Wilson Bentley and author and playwright Rebecca L. Pierce. Yvette, we'll start with you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Tamika. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. So we'll go ahead and jump right on in. So you title yourself an inspirationalist. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is in everything that I write and in everything that I say and do, I strive to encourage and inspire people. I want to always be that one that gives someone an inspiring word, encourages them to let them know that no matter what they've been through, no matter what they're trying to do, that the answer is always yes.
Okay, very good. I love that. The answer is always yes. So you have published a couple of books. Why don't you tell us about your publishing journey?
Okay, well, I started my publishing journey officially in January 2012, so that makes about 4 years this month. Yay!
Congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you. The first book that I published is titled Enhancing the Journey, and it is a collection of short essays, devotionals, parables, and they're based on my life experiences, well, some of them, but they all have the baseline of an experience I had, what God revealed to me through that experience, and how I play that revelation forward. It is not necessarily tied to anything religion-specific, but just more of spiritual revelations that I had received. When I published that book, I was with a private publisher, and I was not satisfied with the outcome initially, so I decided to take the initiative and learn about the publishing industry myself. So I hired a designer, and from there, you know, hired an editor, and I have you know, completely managed my own publishing since.
Oh, awesome. Okay. And so, okay, so that's that. You have your, you went from being a published author with someone else into starting your own company, and so now you have, you've published your first book through your own brand now. Is that correct?
Yes, I published my first book through my own brand. Got a new cover for it. Added more content. Republished a book rather in August 2012. I started vlogging, you know, somewhat once or twice a week, and so then I had attended a writing seminar and decided that I was going to write a book that was a little closer to my life, in as much as sharing a particular part of my life that it was a very dark point in my life, and how God had brought me from a point of darkness to the light. And so with that came Thirst No More, A Woman's Journey to Restoration, that I published February of last year.
Okay, very good. Okay, so why don't you tell us one thing you wish you had known, either about the publishing industry or about, I guess, any part of your journey that would have made it a little easier for you.
Well, One thing I wish I had known in advance was how pertinent it was for me to do research. There is so much more to writing the book than just sitting down writing, you know, a book. I mean, that is one component, but taking the time to research for an editor, just taking the time to research the self-publishing process, you know, from start to finish, because I was clueless, and I had placed this huge expectation on myself to have knowledge and experience in an arena that I had not ever entered before.
Okay. Yes. Yes. I'm over here nodding my head, remembering my experiences coming out too. And, you know,
so you can relate to that.
I absolutely can. And, you know, there are so many things that kind of, I guess I look at those those challenges. What seemed like it was just a frustrating learning curve ended up really producing some great seeds later on, you know. So I guess as I think about that, my question for you is, have you taken what you were missing during those times and included some of that stuff in your new brand, you know, to make it easier for the next person?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I have learned so much, you know, and a lot of my knowledge today, you know, comes from, you know, mistakes that I have made. Some of them have been costly, financially. Costly, you know, emotionally, cost, you know, it came with a price, you know, it has all come with a price. And one of my firm beliefs is I don't ever want anyone to experience some of the things that I have gone through. And so, you know, in doing so, whether I am working with someone on an editing project or either on a typesetting project, or if I'm actually working with them to publish them, my main goal with any of my clients is to educate them. I am all about education, about the process, because what I want my clients to do is to be empowered and to be able to take their baby and run with it. You know, I'm not trying to hold nobody's child hostage.
Now, are you a fee-for-service publisher or a traditional publisher, or are you doing both?
No, I am a fee-for-service at this time because I have actually just recently got to the point of being confident enough to publish for other people. And, you know, I have two right now, but I'm just strictly doing fee-for-service because of other obligations that I have. I don't have the time to commit to traditional publishing.
Yes, I understand. I do. So why don't you tell us the name of your publishing company?
The name of my publishing company is Write Type Publishing, and Write is spelled W-R-Y-T-E. And, again, the name Write Type, you know, was generated from some of the lessons that I've learned from the experiences, you know, that I have had. And not to say that my way is 100% the right way to do it, but what I will say is that I will share the benefit of my experience, and I am humble enough to say that if I do not have an answer, I will dig to get the answer, or I will direct a person to another person or another source to get that answer.
Okay, that sounds good. So in addition to her having the publishing company, you know, as we mentioned, she is also an author. So why don't you tell us again the titles of your works and give us a brief description, you know, just in case people missed it.
Okay, well, again, Enhancing the Journey was my first book, collection of essays and short devotionals about experiences that I've had in my life, what God has revealed to me through those experiences and how I play them forward. My second book was Thirst No More, A Journey to a Woman's Journey to Restoration, part of my life story and how it relates to the woman at the well. I have had the privilege of working with national author Vanessa Miller in an anthology called Love, Hope, and Faith that has been published in volumes 1 and 2. I was able to be a co-author in volume 1. A story that I contributed was called From Trustless to Trustworthy. I talk about how I learned to have relationships with women. One of the things that I heard women say, and I've said it myself, is I don't trust women. And only to find out that the reason why I didn't trust women because I was not a trustworthy woman.
Okay.
So that's what that story is about. I was not able to participate in Volume 2. However, I am all reared up to go and contribute a story for Volume 3, which will be published sometime in the fall. So I'm very excited to be working with Vanessa again. It is a very humbling and very honoring experience.
Oh, that is wonderful. So it sounds like there is a general theme present in your work of kind of empowering and uplifting people. Is there something else that you want people to take away from your work? You know, once they've read your books?
Yeah, a couple of things. What I want people to take away is that, first of all, I'm not trying to shove any type of religion down anyone's throat, you know, and I want to make that crystal clear, you know, because what I try to share with people is spirituality. You know, people understand God as they choose to understand God. I understand God how I understand God. If that doesn't work for you, then that, you know, is on you. But this is what works for me, and I'm going to share the benefit of my experience with you. You know, but the main thing that I want to drive home to people is, you know, don't try to walk through this world and this life alone, trying to fix your life, trying to manage your life, because it's just not possible. And, you know, don't knock the spiritual walk until you've tried it. You know, you will be amazed before you're halfway through. And I try to talk to people through my writing and everything in language that everyone can understand, because, you know, there's no big eyes, no little U's, and, you know, I'm not going to be high on God and low on people. That's just not how
I
do things. And so I try to reach people, you know, where they are, you know, and not that I have to compromise any of my principles to do so, but, you know, the message is the same, but you have to consistently change the method and how you deliver that message.
That's right. Wow. I just love that answer. That's such a great answer. Excuse me. And, you know, because we know that so many people just, religion has been just kind of beat down people's throats, and they just aren't always open. So I think it's wonderful that you just meet people right where they are, you know, so that's wonderful. And I'm sure opens you up to a whole slew more, you know, of other people, you know, to be able to reach, because you're not trying to force something down their throats. You know, that's very wise. Excuse me. I love that quote that you said about, you know, you're not going to be God high and people low, you know, very powerful. Very powerful.
Right, right. And, you know, part of reaching people is listening to them. We have to listen, you know, to people and see where they're at and where they've been and where they're trying to go.
I'm loving this interview. This is fantastic. Where does your inspiration come from?
Well, of course, I you know, have a, you know, relationship with God. You know, my inspiration definitely comes from him, and it also comes from the people that he places in my life, you know, whether it is, you know, a reader base or just people in my day-to-day life. It comes from the things that he pours into me to write, because there are times that I go back and I read my own books and my own writing. It's like, wow, did I write that? You know, and I get what I need. I get inspiration from reading, you know, the works of others. I love Ian LaVanzin. I love Joyce Myers, John Maxwell. As far as fiction, Vanessa Miller, Kimberly Lawson Roby, Sheila Bell, Lipsy. I mean, I believe that anything that I experience in life from day to day, there is a message of inspiration in it somewhere, whether it's the grocery store, whether it's reading the newspaper, anything that I encounter, I can find some source of inspiration.
Okay. I love that. Excuse me. Now, what genre would you say that you write in?
I would say that I write in definitely nonfiction, because everything that I've written up to this point has been based on, you know, my experience. You know, I try to write based on what I know. And I would say that it borders, you know, between spiritual. I wouldn't say that it was hardline Christianity. Now, I will say that Thirst No More, my last book, Thirst No More, it would probably fall more under the guidelines of Christianity, because, again, I used it you know, to parallel to the story of the Samaritan woman, which is based off, you know, the story of John chapter 4 in the Bible. So, I try to stay more in the lines of spirituality, again, because I want people to feel like that they have a choice to go in the direction that they see fit.
Yes. Are there any other genres that you'd like to try writing in?
Well, I had tried to write in fiction a couple of years ago, and I felt like I would go pull my hair out, what little I have. And I said, this is not for me. I can't do it. But I think that probably in a year or so, I am going to give it a try. Again, I've learned a lot since that time. And then I'm going to give it another whirl because I've got some good ideas bouncing around in my head.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good. Do you think that you'll do women's fiction, or what genre do you think in the fiction category will you focus on?
I think it's going to be, you know, women's, you know, contemporary fiction.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, I don't think it'll be so much Christian fiction, but just be, you know, contemporary fiction.
Okay. That sounds wonderful. So you're also a member of several writers' organizations. How has that been beneficial to you?
Oh, I love, you know, the organization. Well, I've been a member of my book club for the last 6 years, and we have not met as regularly as we normally do, which is once a month. We've had a lot of different health challenges, life, you know, challenges, et cetera. But meeting with them is great because one of the things that I know that helps me to be a better writer is to be an avid reader. You know, I love to read as much as I love to write, and you know, that always helps. And then as far as the writer organizations and just having relationships with other writers as a whole, you know, it's always learning opportunities. Of course, there is, you know, the level of accountability, you know, those iron sharpening iron experiences. And, you know, again, there's just, you know, so much room to grow and expand and just really take off in flight, you know, pretty much any direction, you know, that you want to go. What I will say is that it took me some time to find my niche as far as, you know, who am I and what audience do I need to present myself to, because early on, and I think this is very important, I was trying to sit myself in front of every type of audience, and that was a huge mistake because everybody just not, every audience is just not for me, and I'm not for audience, and that's okay, you know. So I'm actually in the process of, you know, knowing what I know about myself now and getting ready to work with a professional and do even some more rebranding and marketing and, you know, repackage myself to, you know, go to the next level. So you'll probably see more of that maybe by the summer, if not before.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, you touched on something really really important there, talking about knowing your audience. So let's delve into that a little deeper because, you know, especially for indie authors who are trying to do everything on their own, you know, major publishers, they have departments and they have people who are assigned to do certain things. So when you're an indie, everything falls on you. You know, so it's there are massive learning curves, you know, there. But for the person who hasn't figured out where their audience is or figured out what their niche is, what advice would you give them, you know, in helping to pinpoint who their audience is and who it is that they need to reach?
The greatest advice that I could give anyone is don't rush the process, because it is a process. You know, it took me almost 3 years, you know, to get to this point. To be, you know, okay in my skin about that. You know, don't rush the process. And when you don't know what to do, just do what's in front of you, you know, and just continue to do what's in front of you. And, you know, when it is time for it all to become clear to you, it will.
Okay. Okay, that's good. So why don't you tell us about your teleconferences entitled Candid Conversations. I like that title.
Okay, yeah, Candid Conversations. Okay, Candid Conversations was something that I started about February 2015, and I had created that platform because I wanted to have a platform that provided a voice about contemporary social problems, and to be able to, you know, speak about them candidly without a lot of, you know, instruction or a lot of theologian principles or doctorate perspective, you know, just to be able to have everyday conversation about, you know, different subject matters. And so I did it for a couple of months last year, and it was pretty good, you know, but I had some other responsibilities that I needed to tend to, so I put it on the shelf. But when I started rethinking that concept a few months ago, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to bring that back because I really like talking to people. I enjoy the dialogue, you know, that we would share. And I do know that one of, you know, my roles, you know, is to provide a voice for people that are not able or capable to be a voice for themselves, you know, and to be a resource, because one of the things that I hear from, you know, friends of mine all the time is, you are so resourceful, you know how to do this, you know where to go here. So so I revamped it, you know, to state that, you know, not only, you know, contemporary social problems, but to be able to provide, you know, solution-based, you know, resources, you know, and, you know, so basically what they're saying is, you know, not to just kick around the problem, you know, but to be able to find a solution, you know, to address that problem. So the first call actually is going to be tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern.
Okay.
The first and the title of the call is going to be Hang Together or Die Separately. And it is going to be the main focus point is going to be around dealing with addiction. Because there's a lot of drug addiction in this country today. It's a lot of it. And it's just running rampant, especially with our young people. And and the main purpose that I'm wanting to drive home with that call tomorrow is that people that are being affected or afflicted by it will benefit more if they quit trying to handle this battle that is too big for them alone.
Okay.
Because you'll die.
Okay. All right. So who are the participants then in these conferences? Who are you trying to reach, or who's calling and participating with you on those?
Well, I mean, up to this point, because this is the first time I've done it in almost a year, you know, of course I've invited, you know, all of my contacts on social media and, you know, with the hopes that, you know, they reach out to their contacts and, you know, just kind of spread the word around. But again, that is something that is on my list, you know, as I am going through my branding process to learn how to reach others, you know, effectively. But I am, you know, wanting to reach out, you know, to many people as possible, not only for the sake of the call, but to also introduce them to a blog that I have that's called Reaching Others, because I do have a blog that I speak to regarding issues surrounding substance abuse, addictions, as well as recovery.
Well, I guess what I was kind of asking is, are you looking to, you know, reach more of people to kind of partner with you in the community and open, you know, and kind of do programs to that tie in with what you're doing, or are you looking to reach the people who are struggling through these things? You know, that's kind of what I was asking.
All the above. I mean, if someone approaches me and say, hey, let's partner up, let's collaborate, let's do something, if it's doable, I'm on it.
Okay, that sounds good. So you said that the first call for the year, it starts tomorrow. Where can our listeners join in if they're interested in joining your teleconference? How can they reach you on those?
I have an event page on Facebook, and if you type in the search engine, Candid Conversations, it should come up, Candid Conversation teleconference.
Okay, sounds good. So you are also very big into philanthropy. What are some of the causes that are dear to your heart?
Some of the causes that are dear to my heart, as I just said, is, you know, substance abuse and recovery, issues dealing with women and children, domestic violence, you know, sexual assault, you know, any type of issues, you know, women, you know, are being harmed or hurt with health issues, you know, breast cancer, lymphoma, you know, things like that. So I have had the privilege of working for a few, you know, nonprofit organizations. As a matter of fact, I started with a new organization this year that is near and dear to my heart that serves women and children. And I'm just so excited and so blessed to be there. And so I am going to, you know, again, have some opportunities to work, you know, doing some philanthropy things, you know, in some great and even, you know, small ways. And I'm just tickled pink.
That is so wonderful to be able to, you know, to tie your time and your, you know, what you do for a living into things that are so meaningful to you. So, you know, that's a blessing in and of itself. You know, so I'm glad that you that you mentioned that. You know, because so many of us are just doing what we have to do, but not necessarily doing what we want to do. And so, you know, even you know, even you mentioning that you are having an opportunity to do what you want to do, that's so empowering to someone else. You know, it's so empowering.
It's empowering to me because I've been doing what I have to do employment-wise for the last 6 years. So I'm just thrilled. I'm just thrilled.
Aww. Congratulations. I'm glad for that shift for you, you know.
Thank
so
you.
I wanted to
Thank
touch, based on your publishing company, just a little bit more. So you do publish the works of other authors and your fee for service. Why don't you tell the listeners what your criteria is, because there might be an author, you know, a potential author out there who's looking for someone to help them get published.
Well, the criteria basically for me, what I try to do with people is more or less listen to what they're wanting to do and try to package people according to their individual needs. I pretty much will work with anyone that's publishing anything except for anything that contains profanity or erotica. I do not work in those genres at all. But, you know, other than that, we can definitely have a conversation, and if it is not something that I feel is a good fit, you know, for myself or for them, you know, because I have networked with other authors and other publishers, I have no issue with, you know, partnering them with someone else that would be able to serve their greatest good.
Okay, sounds good. So we know that not everyone on this journey is starting off at the same place or with the same amount of support. So what advice would you give to a young person who has a dream of something more than their environment, but they're lacking financial and emotional support to make their dream a reality? What would you say to that person?
What I would say to that person is, you know, if, you know, they are, you know, financially challenged, you know, at this time, start off slow, you know, build a blog, you know, start a blog, you know, just start a blog and just show a level of consistency, you know, writer's right. Writer's right. And, you know, start a blog, you know, write from there and build relationships, you know, begin to build relationships with other people. I'm a firm believer in something that our First Lady, Michelle Obama stated, you know, if you focus on making a difference more than making a dollar, the dollars will come.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, that's a good point that you brought up about the blogging, because in case you didn't know, you know, to the listening audience, most of the blogs, you can start a blog for free. So that is absolutely a way to, you know, get in the habit of writing. It's a way of getting yourself out there and getting people familiar with seeing your name in print, you know, and it doesn't cost anything but a little bit of time. So that's an excellent point that you've brought up for them, Yvette. What can we expect from you next?
Well, I am actually working on two projects right now. The next one that is coming forth actually is a devotional book. It is going to be the first volume of 4, and it, I'm working on it now. I'm hoping to get it to my editor about the mid part of February. We hope, in hopes to publishing this late spring or early summer. And okay. It's going to be in 90-day increments. And then I have another book that I am working on that is going to be a self-help book that addresses people-pleasing and approval addiction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. Both of those sound like very interesting reads, so you'll have to let us know how that's going, and we can maybe have you back on the show.
Excuse me.
Why don't you tell us? Oh, yes, you're welcome. Tell us the titles of your books again, where your books can be purchased, and how our listeners can follow you on social media.
All right. Well, again, the titles are Enhancing the Journey and Thirst No More. My books are available on Amazon, in e-books, Kindle, as well as Nook. If you prefer paperback, I am running a special right now, 3 for $20, and that includes free shipping in the United States.
Awesome. Okay.
You can find me on social media, Yvette Wilson Bentley, and that's Yvette with a Y, B-E-T-T-E. Or you can find my site at ywilsonbentley.com and send me a friend request or like my page. Send me an inbox message. Would love to connect with you. You know, I love conversing with others. If you can, join me on the call tomorrow night. You know, even if it's just for a few minutes, would love to have you, you know, just show up and you'll get a chance to hear a little bit more about, you know, who I am and the things that I like to do as far as serving others.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to share?
Yes, there is. And this is for the new author or the person that is new on any journey that they have.
Okay.
And basically what I'll tell you is to just stay on the road. You know,
okay.
Whatever your road you are on, just stay on mm-hmm. the road. You know, even when the road gets rough, even when it gets weary, if you need to stop and rest, you know, stop and rest. We're not super people. You know, we're human
mm-hmm.
beings. Sometimes we need rest and water and food
right.
and all that. Rest when you need to. Regroup
mm-hmm.
when you
That's
need
so good.
To.
Yes.
But just stay on the road.
That is so good. That is so good. Yvette, thank you so much for calling in and speaking with us today. You know, keep us abreast of all your future projects and works and things that you have going on. We certainly wish you much success on your journey.
Thank you
now,
so
I do
much
have another,
for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. You're more than welcome to hang out with us for the other part of the show, you know, if you'd like to. And
sure.
Have a great day. Okay.
You
all right,
too.
I'll put you, thanks. Put you on hold here.
Okay.
And again, if you are just tuning in to In the Spotlight, we have just interviewed author and inspirationalist Yvette Wilson Bentley. Before I bring our next guest on, now I am having a few difficulties with my switchboard here, but I do have a word from the sponsor. If you are looking for events to attend this year, all of you authors out there, you should probably check out the Dayton Book Expo in Dayton, Ohio. The event's been going on for a number of years, and it's a great way to come out and meet with all sorts of readers. It's held at a community college, Sinclair Community College in Dayton, Ohio. And the event this year will be Saturday, August 30th. It's just a one-day event, and the cost is nominal. You can search that DaytonBookExpo.com for more information, or you can contact its founder, Valerie J. Wilson Coleman, on Facebook for more information. And we'll see if I can bring my next caller in. Rebecca, are you there? Rebecca, are you on the line? We seem to be having some technical difficulties. Let me see if I can get my next caller on the line. In the meantime, I hope that your new year is getting off to a fantastic start, that you are still in the process of making your dreams come true, and that you are following your plan and working your plan and each day making daily progress. I am trying to get our caller on the line. I can see her there, and the switchboard is giving me a little bit of difficulty, so just bear with me, please. I think we have her this time. Rebecca?
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi there. Yes, I'm so sorry about that, having problems with the switchboard today. So
that's okay.
let me give you a proper introduction. Okay, so I'd like to bring our next guest on the line, and that is author and playwright Rebecca L. Pierce. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Yes. So you are quite the accomplished writer. You have a number of works published. Please tell us about your titles and give us the storyline for each one of them, please.
Well, my first book started out actually as a novella, and then I merged the two books together to create a novel, and that's Sex, Lies, and Shoeboxes, and that's a mystery, contemporary mystery suspense novel around a female detective named Bobby Vale, who has quite a dark past, battling alcoholism and child abuse. And she is trying to get her life together as she solves mysteries and crimes, and sometimes she does it well and sometimes not so well. So that's one of my most contemporary pieces, and again, that's called Sex, Lies, and Shoeboxes. And all my books are available on Amazon or wherever books are sold. The second novel, a historic fiction novel, would be Murder on Second Street, the Jackson Ward Murders. And that is a historic fiction that takes place circa 1929 in the historic Negro neighborhood of Jackson Ward in Richmond, Virginia. And that deals with our protagonist, he's a World War One veteran named Cy Sanford, who comes home to find that there's hardly any work, and he's battling demons from the battlefield, and when a serial killer happens upon Jackson Ward, he is reluctantly hired to try to figure out who's murdering working class Negro women and dumping their bodies in the ward. And that is historic fiction, meaning it does take place in an actual period in American history. And then that led to the second historic fiction novel, which is The Secret Life of Lucy Bossman. That's my most recent work. And that deals with a freed former slave mulatto woman named Lucy Bossman. This takes place 1860 to 1862 in Richmond, Virginia. And she comes to Richmond from Tennessee to claim property left to her by her deceased husband. And it kind of looks at her decision to allow the community to think that she is white because she feels she has no other option in order to claim her property. So it looks at how she handles that in the midst of the looming Civil War, as well as a love story, a triangle between two suitors, one a free colored man and the other a very wealthy horse breeder in town.
Okay.
So those are the three main books at this moment, on top of my short play collection, On the Cusp of Humanity.
Okay. All right. Now, I've been following your work for a while now, and your choice of subject matter is always so interesting to me. So how do you come up with your story ideas?
Well, they actually come to me. I'm very much an inspirational writer in that my muse sends me stories. I'll be walking down the street and something will pop up. I'll see something and it'll trigger a story idea in my head. So I don't usually pick them. They usually are given to me, and I make the decision as to, well, most of the time I make the decision as to whether or not, you know, I need to sit down and pen it. And sometimes, you know, even if I don't have time, it'll nag me until I do sit down and write it, because I actually was working on Sex, Lies, and Shoeboxes for about 10 years, and the idea for The Secret Life of Lucy Bossman occurred as I was writing Murder on Second Street. So it took 5 years before that story, before I actually sat down and started writing The Secret Life of Lucy Bossman. So I sat on that for about 5 years. But they never go away until I tell them. So
sounds good. And we're glad that they won't let up on you, because they've been some really great books. So
thank you.
Would you say there is an overall theme present in your work? And if so, what is it?
Well, yes, in all my pieces, regardless if they're novels, essays, blogging, plays, screenplays, whatnot, the overall arching theme in all my work is humanity, and how we really need to look beyond the mask and tap into the general desire that all human beings have, which is to be loved. Mm-hmm. At the core of all of our existences, we all want to be loved. We were made in love to love. And so I get these stories that are really about the darkness, but how these characters are trying to tap into the light, so to speak. Yes. So, you know, Murder on Second Street takes place in, 1929, Richmond. We're talking Jim Crow segregation, a lot of darkness. We're also talking about prohibition and the emergence of World War One and getting ready to head into the Great Depression. And then The Secret Life of Lucy Bosman, we're talking about slavery and suppression of women's rights and women's voices. But each of these characters, in all my work, you find the protagonist is always trying to assert their human decency and the desire to be treated as such and the desire to be loved as such. So that would be the common theme with all my work.
Okay. So why don't you tell us, where did your writing journey begin? You know, and when did you know that you wanted to be an author?
Oh, I've always known. Oh, my gosh. Really? I think my mother, I think probably when I was born, she put a pencil and a book in my hand immediately. Because I can't remember a time when I've never not written something or have not been reading. But I think probably in the seventh, eighth grade, was where I wrote my first little book, Cool Times at Ridgemont High, where I realized that I was going to be a writer. Because I love to tell stories, and it was cemented there. But I've known since about 14, 15 that I was going to be a teacher. That was there too. So my background is in English literature. You know, I teach. That's my background. So they're connected, always interconnected. But I've always pretty much used this gift of writing throughout my entire life.
So you're also an accomplished playwright. Why don't you tell us about your plays?
Well, I have a lot. There's too many to go into now.
Okay.
But yeah, I have a couple. I've been writing theater for, a little over 10 years now. But I have one of my current projects, my project for 2016, on top of the film Black Wall Street. My next big project is probably one of my most challenging plays dealing with race and love and history. And that is That Colorblind Kind of Love. We're going to be doing a workshop of that play at the Anacostia Playhouse Theater in Washington, D.C., April 15th through the 17th. And my whole purpose for doing this workshop is to, number one, you know, I wrote the play 5 years ago. It has been performed in both New York and in D.C. But I want to go back in now at the tail end of President Barack Obama's presidency, as well as the fact that the Loving story, because this play is loosely based off of the Richard and Mildred Loving case of 1967, off their story. That film is coming out this year. And I think this is the appropriate time to showcase in theater this the stuff that's been going on in society. It's always been there. It's just now more prevalent than ever, talking about police brutality and this need for society to make people choose their identity, choose race. So this play deals with a lot of that, and so I think it's the right time to have this conversation through the lens of theater. And so we're hoping to create a college tour off of this play after we've done our workshop. Yes, and a regional theater tour as well for this particular piece. So that's That Colorblind Kind of Love.
Tell us the name of that one again, please.
That Colorblind Kind of Love.
Oh, okay.
Really, a really challenging piece. Yeah, really. I mean, it has a lot of elements, and if you know my work, then this piece also has a little bit of time travel, some mysticism, African rituals, and the belief in reincarnation, traveling spirits, but mixed with contemporary modern issues such as miscegenation or integration, multicultural relationships, and things like that. So that's the big project that I'm working on for 2016.
Okay, sounds
in
good.
In theater.
What would you say is the genre that you write in, you know, most, I guess?
Really,
who is your target audience?
I write across all the genres. I can't even say there's one mostly deal with because, I'm an inspirational writer, so I'll do blogging.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a novelist, screenwriter, playwright. So there's really not one. And probably why there's not one for me is because I really do believe that writers should try their hand in many different genres. It strengthens you as a writer. But my core audience, target audience for much of my work is women. You know, I don't know if you know, but many years ago I published a motivational magazine for women called Average Girl Magazine. And I published that magazine in response to the murder of my cousin. She was a victim of domestic violence. So my mission since 2003, it has been to put out work that tells our stories, the story of woman, regardless of her skin color, but tells our stories and to kind of shine light upon the box that's often tried to be placed upon woman. And I put a quote mark around woman, whether it's, you know, if you're a woman, you can't have a family and a career, or if you do have both, you're not giving both your all and somebody's going to suffer. And but I also look at this idea of relationships between women, between sisters, between mother-daughter, what that looks like, and not just in our contemporary period, but also coming through history, what that kind of looks like. So even with, for example, Murder on Second Street, even though the protagonist is a male, in that piece are strong women, and the murderer is attacking women of color. And, you know, there's a lot of nuances to that idea, to that belief that even in 1929, as we still see today with the Sandra Bland situation and other women who've been attacked across the country, that the black female body, her presence is still being attacked. But it's also white women, too. Also white women, too. So I tend to really focus my messages, a lot of that, my core audience, a lot of it is women.
Okay.
Women and young girls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we know that you are, that you're teaching at a university. Have you found that working in an academic arena has helped open up doors for you, you know, since becoming an author?
Absolutely not.
No.
No. No. No.
Okay.
I can answer that honestly. No. And right now I'm not at a major university. Right now I'm at an allied health school. But you know, like I said, I've worked in both the public school system. I've worked for private universities, state-run universities, now in allied health schools, vocational schools. And no, none of it has helped because, you know, unfortunately, when you're in academia, you're in academia. And you're whatever you write or whatever your focus is, it is directed at that world only. So you really have to branch out and expand your creativity and your opportunities because, you know, if it's not being funded by the university press, then no, there's no connection in that way other than you have the credibility on your resume and your CV and in your bio to say, you know, a master's degree in English lit and now preparing for a doctorate in African-American lit. That looks good credibility-wise, but no, it hasn't opened doors in that way for me.
Interesting. Okay. All right. What would you say has been your biggest challenge to date since embarking on this literary journey?
Biggest challenge has probably been that, okay, well, I know that I write about subject matter that's not pretty, and I don't have happy endings in my work. And because my work reflects, it's a mirror of life of our world. And so I've often been accused of not giving the traditional romantic happy ending in both my plays and in my novels. And that's not what I'm here for. I'm not here to get I'm not here to put a bow on it. I'm not given those kinds of stories. I mean, it'd be nice if I were given that, that's what I would write. But no, I'm very much what I call a socially conscious writer. So a lot of my stuff is not easy to deal with. I mean, I have a play called Sarah's Blood. It's an award-winning play, but it's a play about a short play about a 12-year-old girl who tells her best friend that her stepfather is pimping her out to his friends as her mother lays dying of cancer. And she asked her best friend, can she help her create a prayer army because her stepfather is known as a very pious religious man in the community. And so that piece, when it's performed at the end, the audience is not sure what to do. Should I clap or should I cry? Or should I run from the theater? What should I do? So I, you know, the challenge has been for people, I don't like to use the word accept because not everybody's supposed to accept the piece, but really just probably helping people to understand that, you know, some of us, I have a different purpose and a different road with my work. And, you know, when you come to see one of my pieces, you're going to get some humor, but you're going to get a whole lot of truth. And if you're not ready for that, you know, this is definitely not the place to be.
So this sounds interesting because I hadn't heard of this play. when you do you ever consider taking that particular play and turning it into a book? Or are you going to put more productions out with that play or what? Because I haven't seen it, but it sounds very interesting. And so I'd like to.
Well, yeah, I have that piece and another piece called That Woman's Child that actually looks at it from another perspective, and that is what happens to the child who is the product of an affair. And mm-hmm. I kind of got that story from the Elizabeth, I forgot her name, but the last name. Her husband was the senator who bowed out in disgrace. But in that piece, we look at the how society places this, you know, sins of the mother upon the children. And how mm-hmm. does this young woman find her own identity in a community that is hell-bent on making her pay for what her mother did and for ruining the so-called Cinderella story, the other woman in the piece. So these pieces are short pieces, and they're available in my book, On the Cusp of Humanity. And, you know, they've been in festivals. Yeah, they've been in festivals. Mm-hmm. That's where we won and placed in several of our festivals. I've been asked if I will bring On the Cusp of Humanity back on the stage, because we did do the plays in that collection several years ago. And I'm still debating that, because I really want to get Colorblind Kind of Love up and out there.
Gotcha.
But I mean, the piece is, you know, Sarah's Blood is, a lot of people don't want to touch that piece. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. it's not pretty.
Okay.
And the decision that the character makes at the end is not pretty, but I would love to see it performed in schools to really open up and have dialogue about child abuse and molestation. And mm-hmm. do we listen to children when they tell us what's going on?
Mm. Right.
What's happening with them.
That's so powerful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
If there was one thing about the literary industry that you could change, what would it be?
The belief that if you don't have an agent, you're not a writer, or you're not valuable or worthy. I find mm-hmm. that very disconcerting. I'm on mm-hmm. one of the major writing community boards here in Central Virginia. And one of the things we struggle with greatly is bringing into the fold and recognizing that not every writer wants an agent, number one.
mm-hmm.
And number two, wants to go to the traditional route of seeking out a publisher. There are many people like myself who want to have more control over their work and be more autonomous. And, you know, we do submit every once in a while to traditional publishers, but it doesn't define the value of our work. And so that's still a challenge in the self-publishing world, is getting that support and recognition for a piece that, you know, may not ever hit the New York Times bestsellers list because you don't have that agent or that publisher pushing it in the mm-hmm. background, but it can compete. It can compete with any of the books out there on the market. That's one of the biggest challenges. Yeah.
Okay. So in addition to all of your literary accomplishments that you've made, you're also a wife and mother. How do you find the time to juggle it all?
Well, I don't think it's juggling. It's more of my children have come out the womb knowing who their mother is and what she does. You know, I can't teach my children. I believe this strongly. You can't teach your children how to dream if they don't see you chasing yours. If they don't see you putting
good.
The work and the time and energy on yours. The second thing is you have to have a really strong support system. I'm very blessed in that I have a strong core support system that enables me to travel if I need to, or to, you know, speak at an event or whatnot. I have that, and that's one of the things when I start working with clients, is that I have to ask them that question, who is your support system? Because writing is a process, and that's how I mm-hmm. teach it. It is a process. It is a journey. And please know that in terms of the writing part, and even in terms of the marketing part, you're going to be walking that alone. But mm-hmm. as long as you have that core group person or persons who can give you the space, that moment to write, that time, then, you know, that's what you need. You know, my children are 14 and 6. So the 14-year-old knows, he's been here long enough. He knows.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, mommy's going into the writing or whatnot. And the 6-year-old, mm-hmm. she even knows now. So what I do, my children are not surprised by. When I have to go out of town, it's not, there's no crying or whining. It's, okay, mommy, mm-hmm. see you when you get back. I love you. I miss you. Because I haven't made it something that's alien to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about the Rebecca L. Pierce Agency. Tell us about your company.
Well, actually, the company is now RLP Productions, and we are a production company that really does everything having to do with written communication, whether it's editing or helping you to publish. but it's also theater and film. So I definitely wanted to chat quickly, if I could, about our current film project, Black Wall Street,
Absolutely.
The Money, the Music, the People, which is loosely based off of the novel Murder on Second Street. So our goal is, we are a emerging nonprofit who our method, or excuse me, our mission is to put out, whether it's novel, film, or theater, works that blend history with entertainment. So we're about edutainment. So our pieces that we will be putting out, so Black Wall Street, that's coming out next month, you know, we blended documentary style with short fiction film. And because what I, you know, I hate to say it, but as an English teacher, it kills me. People don't read. They don't pick up a book and read like they used to, but people will watch film. So I figured that if I can take that story, Murder on Second Street, which is contains so much rich history and information about the African-American experience in Richmond at the turn of the century, if I could develop that into film, then perhaps that will not only inspire young artists to look in their backyard and see the beauty and the treasure that is back there, but maybe it'll send some people to the library or to Google to find out more about history. So RLP Productions is about putting out works that educate and entertain their audiences. And we work really hard also with my private editing clients to make sure that whatever work project they are preparing to put out, that we put out a solid, credible, professionally edited, formatted product out into the market, because it's competitive enough with everything that's out there. But if you're going to be in this game called self-publishing and indie film production, you have to have a solid, well-written, I don't care if it's screenplay, play, manuscript. It must be solid in storytelling, character development, and editing before you put it out into the market. So that's pretty much what. So basically, I just took I just took the Pierce Agency and put it underneath RLP Productions.
Okay, gotcha.
So we do everything written communication. Yeah.
All right. So we know that you've got the play coming up. What can we expect from you next? Do you have any more books coming?
Well, I need to write book two of Murder on Second Street, but like I said, this year, 2016, we're going to be focusing on our film, putting that into film festivals across the country and getting that story out there. We're going to be concentrating from the theatrical, putting out that colorblind kind of love. And I do have a fantasy adventure book that I need to finish this year. It's called Captain Jack, and that is the story of a female pirate, Jacqueline Haitian, female Haitian pirate from the 16th century, and I really found the story of a black female pirate. Very small mention of her in history, but I want to, again, historic fiction, but in fantasy, I want to kind of elaborate on that story to, again, kind of, hello, we've been here. We've been here for a long time. And even in this industry that, you know, the pirate industry was, you know, so much male dominated. And when they talk about female pirates, they only talk about white women primarily as female pirates. Well, that's cool. They're there, but there were also women of color. And
that's
so
right.
Captain Jack is going to be looking, you know, looking at that end of the lens as well.
That is fantastic. Okay, so why don't you tell our listeners where they can follow you on social media, where your books can be purchased, and how they can keep up with you.
Okay, well, I'm pretty much all over social media on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Periscope. I can't even think of all the others that are out there. Tumblr. Just Google Rebecca with a K-A-H Pierce. Rebecca L. Pierce or Rebecca Pierce. You can Google Black Wall Street, the movie. That's out. And, of course, the Pierce Agency. We're pretty much out there. Like I said, Google us, or you could just email me at editor@averagegirlmagazine.com. I'm on Facebook. Like I said, we have a Facebook page not only for myself but for each one of the novels. There's a Facebook page, fan page for Murder on Second Street, Sex, Lies, and Shoeboxes, The Secret Life of Lucy Bossman, as well as Black Wall Street, and as well as the Pierce Agency. So I'm out there.
Okay. And so, in parting, what advice would you give to an aspiring author?
Well, I'm piggybacking kind of off of what your earlier guest was talking about in terms of branding. You know, you have to create a solid brand, a solid image. I mean, I've been around for a little bit, and people know when they see a Rebecca product, or they see Rebecca, they know they know clearly what I stand for and what I do. I don't, there are no mixed messages on any of my pages.
Mm-hmm.
I am in person, which you see on social media. So people know that my brand is one of quality, integrity, fun, immense love for education, immense love for students, and immense love for the written word. So you need to be consistent in your messages that you're sending out there. Your websites and your social media pages need to reflect your true intentions for who you are and the work that you put out. So, you know, trust and believe, there are many times when I want to respond to some of these political snarky comments that are on social media, or I want to, you know, put a picture out with me and my girls and whatnot. Can't do it. I cannot do that, because that contradicts what I'm about. And, you know, every once in a while I put pictures out there of my children and I, but everything, when I do comment on something, it is in line with who I am and what my fans have known me to be these past almost 15 years. So you have to build a credible brand in terms of your products and what you put out there and who you are as an individual. That's the one big piece of advice I give all my clients. Don't put any old thing out there just to have something out there. Be clear about who you are before you go to market.
Okay.
Be clear.
That's very good. That's very good.
Right.
Well, we have reached the end of our time here. Rebecca, it has certainly been a pleasure talking with you today. Wish you continued success on your literary journey. Yes.
Thank you for having me. I absolutely appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Again, listeners, we have had authors Yvette Wilson-Bentley and Rebecca L. Pierce with us today. If you missed any part of today's podcast, you can hear it in its entirety about 5 minutes after the show airs. Thank you for tuning in. We encourage you to support the authors who appear on the show. Of course, if you like what you hear, pass on the word to others. Supporting those in the literary arena is what we're all about. Join me next week for Say What Author Spotlights with special guest author Miriam Kelly Ferguson. We'll be discussing her debut novel, Weaver, at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on WALN, the Abundant Living Station. Until we meet again, make each day, and don't forget to read a good book. Have a great day.